special edition of the Midday 180 On Demand podcast as we continue our thorough watching of The Wire, the HBO hit show from 2002 to 2008. We move on to season three. Chad Withrow, Jonathan Hutton, Paul Kuharsky, as we continue reviewing The Wire. People said maybe we weren't going to come back. It's been a while since season two. It feels like it was a year ago that we were talking about Frank Sabatka and that storyline. And once again, guys, we go into a completely different realm with city politics and a different storyline in season three, but also the return in full force of the Barksdell criminal organization in season three, which I thought was one of the highlights. Just overall, in general, Hutton, I'm going to start with you. What'd you make of season three? Do you feel like this is a show that continues to build as you watch?
It does. I enjoyed the storyline of season three, getting to more of the political realm of the show, the backstory, but also getting back to Barksdell and everyone else involved in the drug game and getting away from the season two storyline that steered off. I understand why some people called season three the best of the entire series. That's still be to be determined for me because I'm on episode two now of season four, but I thoroughly enjoyed binging season three more than the other seasons.
I liked it as I watched it, but because I'm further ahead now, looking back at it, I didn't like it as much in the context. I broke my own rule, went further ahead because we've been spaced out now by our furloughs and the binge watching of the time dictates certain things. It's good TV, unquestionably. Pretty good character development. It's interesting the way some float in and out, or Chad, I think we'd agree, kind of the amplitude of some rise and fall. And so the politics part I don't like as much as the cops part or the school part or the newspaper part that are in different seasons. But as I was taking it in, I enjoyed it thoroughly and experienced many of the same frustrations. It finds it a frustrating show because it's about broken systems.
So PK, by the way, who was all over me for continuing to watch, saying there was no way that I could keep up with one season and not talk about a future season if I got ahead. And I said, no, I'm mentally capable of talking about one season and keeping my mind there. Breaks that rule by mentioning the school system storyline that's in season four. And we're talking about season three, which Hutton doesn't even know is a thing yet.
I had the very problem I told you you were going to have. I'm confessing that. I had to.
And I said, I'm smart enough to not do that. And you apparently are not.
Because I broke the rule, this morning I had to sit down for extra time, go back and carve myself down to season three because I did what you did, which I told you not to do. But once you did it, you liberated everyone.
Your fault, Chad. Your fault for Paul breaking his own rule.
Exactly. Everyone has their own rule. I'm mentally capable of not talking about future seasons on a podcast. You apparently are not. So that was not a good thing for you.
We have talked on this very podcast about the fact that seasonally this show runs through systems. Hutton pointed that out to us, that this is a series that goes through year by year different systems, the police system, the political system, the school system, the media. So that, I didn't break any new ground.
Here's what I would just like to point this out, Chad. Yeah. We are recapping season three. Paul is in season five. There's no doubt he is in season five right now.
I'm in season five.
So not only has he broken his own rule,
twice.
He is just above and beyond pathetic by breaking that rule.
We're now going to really test Paul to see if, as we go through our big questions from the season, if he can stick with season three and not tell us about something that happens in the final season.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
In season five. No, let's start with the favorite character on the law enforcement side as we go through the big questions surrounding the season. Paul, let's see if you can stay on task with season three here. Who was your favorite character again, Paul, in season three, not season five?
Carver. Carver is my favorite character here. He's well-intentioned. He gets it, but he's struggling to a degree because he's overseeing a pretty much incompetent group in the Western District. And he kind of likes what's going on with the permissible territories, right? But he overreaches. He moves a body into the permissible territories, which actually causes a problem for the whole system. It causes a problem for Colvin. It causes a problem for the whole Hamsterdam issues. But Colvin shows the most growth here. He's the most likable guy. He sees the good and the bad of the Hamsterdam, and he's kind of struggling with the whole thing, like, because the idea is so strains the bounds of credulity, but it also is having a positive effect. And so in that regard, he is me.
Did you say you said Carver to start? You mean Colvin?
No, Carver, who's the young cop.
Okay, the young cop. All right. Because then you went back to Colvin there.
No, because he's doing it for Colvin. He's buying in to a degree to what Colvin's doing.
Gotcha.
So he is me. Carver is me.
I'll go next because, once again, Paul's showing how much he loves himself. He's going with a guy who's him. I'm going with Major Howard Bunny Colvin, who was a new character this season who completely went against the grain with Hamsterdam and legalizing illegal drug use and prostitution in one part of town. And you know what? It worked. I thought his idea, while radical and maybe not completely right, was one of the storylines of the season. And I love the actor, love the character overall, a very strong character and strong police, good police, real police, as we're going to talk about at some point, which is completely different from good police. But I thought Major Howard Bunny Colvin was my favorite character on Law Enforcement this year. Hutton, what about you?
Far and away, it was Colvin for me. And it's because his storyline is the storyline of the show. There is no satisfaction at the end of this, because ultimately, his superiors are going to take credit for a good idea and try to spin it into re-election somehow. He's not going to take the credit. He's going to be ousted, but he knows this all throughout. He's battling that, right? So he knows it's working, but it's also, he knows, doomed to fail because someone's going to find out about this, that he has legalized the drug game down in Hamsterdam. And he's breaking all the rules to clean up the streets, to meet the murder quotas that were handed down to him and the pressure that's put on him. He has his retirement coming up. He has his pension that he's going to get in just a few months. That's just around the corner. I thought it was a great storyline to the season because it also is a smaller version of the entire theme of the show.
That retirement pension are the things that give him the freedom to do it in the first place, right? So, and don't they scale him back at the end? He ends up maybe screwed down a level on his pension or whatever. It's a very creative approach, but at the same time, I don't know if you guys feel like I do. Like, it works, but it doesn't work. Like, it gets the numbers down. It gets crime out of certain areas. But at the same time, there are festivals of crime going on in the three areas where they pin it to. So it hasn't fixed the crime problem. It's relocated the crime problem.
But the one area where the show doesn't have a sympathetic figure is with the drug addicts. This show is not written for the drug addicts. You know nothing about them other than they're shooting up constantly. So again,
Bubbles, we know a little bit about. He's somewhat of a symbol.
Yeah, but they don't care about him. I mean, they don't care if he goes. They give him $20 to go use drugs so they can get information.
Completely.
So, like, really, you don't know much about the addicts themselves, and that's kind of the battle within the show is that people are going to get burned at the end, and the guys on top are going to stay on top.
Again, Paul Herc, season 4.
Well, Herc isn't great. Herc isn't great in this season either.
No, so let's go to the favorite character from the drug criminal side of it. And Hutton, going back to your theme of no matter what happens, it always kind of resets into this same process of bad, then redemption, and then right back to where you were before in the beginning. And I think the best symbol of that this season was Cuddy. Dennis Cuddy Wise, released from prison after 14 years, thought to be a good soldier. Barksdale Crew hires him. He goes back into that dark life where he's going to go murder for a living. Can't bring himself to do it. He's got a boxing background. He starts a gym. He's getting kids off the street. And like most things with this character, kind of ends in a, well, he's trying to do good, but there's not a lot of good you can do in this world of Baltimore criminals. I thought Cuddy was the most compelling guy of the season from the criminal side.
I'm with you on Cuddy. I think Cuddy is the biggest redemption. First off, Cuddy's the first guy we've seen in the series, correct me if I'm wrong, who wanted out and is allowed out and gets out. Now, he came back in like it didn't take the first time, right? But ultimately, he gets out. He's trying to do the right thing for the kids. He makes some headway with some of them, but ultimately, you know, you can only do so much. But he's granted permission to leave, which is unheard of. And he also goes back to Avon and asks for money. They laugh at it ultimately after he practically gives a PowerPoint presentation, right? And then he only asks for 10, 20 grand, and they laugh at it, basically give it to him out of their pockets.
Gives them more, gives them 30 grand.
Yeah, doubles up what he's asking for. And so he's an actual redemption story in this thing where nobody's redeemable. And so for that, he's a huge exception in this story. And again, nobody gets out. Nobody gets out alive. And he gets out. He gets out of jail. He redeems himself. And even if he's not getting through to these kids or changing lives, he's trying. And he's allowed to try. He's somebody to root for that doesn't have a downside.
It's a good storyline. I didn't select him. I did think there should have been further background on why Avon let him go. Here's why he let him go. He went to prison. He served his time. He played the game. He didn't rat anybody out. He didn't run his mouth and make a deal. He sat in prison for the entire time and was released and then told Avon he's not in the game anymore. He paid his due, and he didn't have to pay it with his life because he didn't make a deal with anyone to get out early. That's why he was spared, but they didn't make that clear. But if you're following the dichotomy of that world, that's why he was spared.
Yeah, you're right. Trust him. If you told me a little bit more about what he did to get in and paid the 16 years for or something, a little bit more of his backstory might have helped.
My favorite, and look, I love Omar, and I initially always think about him with this question. The more I think about it for this particular season, my favorite criminal character and the internal battle and the storyline is with Stringer Bell. His character development from the drug business to the Baltimore businessman, the way he was working the system at the political level, the same way he was trying to running the system with Avon in prison, his love for the business game more than the drug game, and the fact that he ultimately gets killed by the drug game, trying to convince Avon why they should focus more on big picture instead of battling with Marlowe's gang over the recent street corner down the, you know, a block down. He knows Avon's weaknesses the same way Avon knows his weaknesses. And that battle that we knew was going to come with one of them being ousted by the end of this show was the storyline of the season. And therefore, the way that built, he was the most intriguing character. Even when McNulty goes into his home and says, who is this guy? I mean, the fact that we saw the backstory of that play out through the political realm with him and the friendships and the business partners he was trying to make, I loved it.
I think Stringer Bell, I'm on the other side of this. I think he starts to reveal himself. He's revealed as an idiot in this, that he thinks that he can cross to some sort of legitimacy, that he's going to get permits, that he can give money to Clay Davis and have it turn out. He's very naive here. He's way over his head in that pool. That the economics class, that's nice that he was taking it at all, but that he could apply it to getting out of the game or going to the right side with the game with money that he got in the game. And that Clay Davis was going to help him out.
But at least he tried. Paul, to your point about Cuddy, at least he tried. Because I think at the end it's showing Cuddy's going to try to get through to the youth, but it's probably not going to work based on where the youth is headed that he's trying to get through to and the problems he has with that. And, of course, Avon Barksdale ends up murdered by Brother Mozone and Omar by the end of it. I thought what was very telling was McNulty's two different reactions. When they find Stringer Bell dead, and he says, he didn't even know that I had him.
Yeah.
He died before he knew that I was on to him and I had him and I was going to put him away, which was so disheartening. And then when they go into his apartment and he sees the artwork and how nice that penthouse apartment was, and he says, who the hell was I even chasing this whole time? When he finds out there was more to Stringer Bell than that, I thought it was a compelling storyline for sure. Least favorite character of the season. And I'll start on this one and I'll make it short. Avon Barksdale. I thought Avon from the beginning was sort of this more mysterious figure in season one that I really liked. Goes to jail in season two, don't have as much with him other than being blind to the fact that his cousin, I guess his nephew, was murdered in prison. Season three gets out of prison and sort of serves as this idiot, I thought. You know, completely dumb to how things were going to affect business when he was such a businessman in season one. I mean, he took care of his business in the game also, but was much more of a businessman. And starting the war in this season and everything else that led to him back in prison, I just thought it was a bad turn for Avon. He was my least favorite character.
Go ahead.
Not a bad one. I went with Mayor Clarence Royce just because I based these questions on my interest level when I see them on screen. Yeah. And anytime I was in a set inside his office, I wanted to fast forward. Like I knew this guy was a non-player, a non-factor in the storyline. He's a set piece for the grander scheme of where the story was going. And so for me, that's my least favorite character because you don't know anything about him. He's just reading a couple of lines and doing whatever he's told politically.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good because he's not that far removed from Davis.
Yeah.
They're pretty similar. I was going to say Chris Parlow, but he's kind of my favorite. You know, I could put him as a least favorite because he's so good at what he's doing. But as a second, I like him. I could put this in a category that we have later. I don't buy Stanfield that much. He's too young. He's not. After I look at Barksdale and Stringer, for Stanfield to be next as the big power broker, he's not in, like, he's intimidating, but he's not intimidating. I just, that character to me isn't good enough.
You weren't intimidated when he killed the girl that was used as the pawn to lure him to that apartment with the honeypot that she laid out for him, and he knew right away and had the watch out in the car when they hooked up, and then when she came over there, was ready to kill her. That to me was where it took a turn where I'm like, okay, this guy's serious and knows what's going on. Knew right away.
Ruthless.
He's serious, but Hutton's good at, he's better at articulating these things. There's just something about the casting, the character, the youth, the quietness that as a replacement for the Avon Stringer duo, he doesn't buy. I like Parlow. Chris Parlow as the new second, who's just kind of quiet and tough as hell and mean. But I don't like his boss. It's not as the foil to Avon, as the head of the thing. He's just way too different and not viable enough for me for some reason. I don't know what it is exactly, but there's something about it I don't like.
Yeah, it's like my problem with Ziggy Sabatka in season two.
Yes.
Just a bad casting choice more than anything is what you're saying with him.
That was
my
point,
too,
on that.
He's too young. He's too young. I don't know how he gets that much power that fast when he's – what do you think he is in this? 28?
Early 20s.
Early 20s.
Say early 20s.
Not even 28. So how do you get that far that fast without some backing when he's like, where's he come from? I need a little backstory. Where's he come from? He just emerges from the shadows and he's got all this power and sway.
Yeah, you almost need a storyline where the head of his operation is killed, murdered, and he takes
you see
over.
Him step up.
Right.
We almost need a spinoff, like a Better Call Saul, a spinoff of The Wire to show the backstory of how he came to power to properly explain it. All right, question number four, favorite episode. I'll start with this one. Mission accomplished, the final episode of the season. Every other season, the best episode has been that second-to-last penultimate episode. The penultimate episode this season ended with Stringer Bell murdered. I thought they fit a lot of really good action and conclusion into this season finale of season three. It still left it with that same musical montage in the end, kind of showing what everyone's going to be doing in season four and spinning to the future. And Hutton is what you say, the whole crux of this show is no matter what you do, what good you try to do, you're still exactly who you are, and you're going to be right back in the place where you started. In a lot of ways, I think it showed that well, but I love the finale of season three with Mission Accomplished.
I went with 11, episode 11, Middle Ground, just because in looking back on the season, if you say, tell, you know, what's the biggest moment, what's the what's the episode that you point to? It's 11, because it's the pivotal moment for the entire series, not just the season, for where we're headed, or at least where I think we're going, because of that battle between Avon and Stringer playing itself out, and we see how it ends. Stringer wants to put out a hit on Senator Davis because of his political contributions not garnering anything in return.
Which was also naive.
And then, well, I mean, not really. I mean, they're making...
What reaction did he get from his boss when he said that? Got laughed at, pretty much.
Right, but I mean, you're seeing other mayors and police chiefs make deals to get reelected, and there are going to be certain appointments that come through that. I mean, that's the game of the political sphere, just like it is the drug game. And so he wants a hit out on Senator Davis. Stringer meets with Colvin and gives up Avon's safe house because he liked the way he was running things before Avon got out of prison. And then Avon gives up Stringer to Brother, knowing that Omar and Brother were going to show up and exact revenge from season two by killing him. And we know how this ends with the most memorable moment of the season. So for me, it's episode 11 in regards to my favorite episode.
Paul?
I do like the tension of that episode. Who's getting killed first? They're both giving up there. So is it? I was pretty sure Avon was going down, and so
me too.
I was surprised that it was Stringer.
And he does go down in a different way when they find the stash house of weapons.
I didn't find, looking back, episode that I felt was so distinct from the rest that I found it singular. So what I went with here is a mini storyline that I really enjoyed, and it was early. It was in episode two. All due respect, when Cheese euthanizes his dog after he loses a dog fight. And then he talks about that killing, the killing of the dog, on his phone. Well, all these guys talked on their phone. Yeah. They never said anything about anything. Well, now he's talking about killing this dog on his cell phone. And the guys who are tapping the phones hear him discussing this murder on their phones. They're like, oh my God, they're talking about a murder on the phones. We got something. We got something. And they go crazy. And the killing of this dog sets off a whole chain of events with the unit. I just thought that was really well done, where they came up with a cause to talk about a bloody murder, finally, and they thought they had something, and it turns out the bloody murder wasn't human.
So question five, most memorable
Chad liked that scene, by the way. Chad, the dog killer.
Yeah, of course. That was a very uplifting. I thought an
How
uplifting
dare you take Chad's answer, Paul?
Yeah, no, it was very sad. It was a powerful moment. For most memorable moment for me, I'm going to go with what I thought was one of the best set piece scenes of the entire series so far. Brother Mazone Omar showdown to open episode 11, Hutton's favorite episode of the season, with Middle Ground. When he confronts him in the alley at night, and they're both describing the weapons that they have and what they could do to the other person with the weapon, and how they are both so calm. And Omar says, you don't have any sweat on your brow either. When he noticed them looking at him, when the gun's pointed at him, I thought was terrific. And my favorite character from a year ago, Brother Mazone, another favorite character from a previous season, and Omar, when they finally stand off and you don't know what's going to happen, and they end up uniting and joining forces, was a great scene that I've gone back and watched a couple times on YouTube since then. It's about 2 minutes and 38 seconds to go and watch that scene start to finish, and it is terrific. That's the most memorable moment for me. Paul, what about you?
Well, I wrote down a one and then a kind of subset, but I thought, and I mean, there were a lot of good things that tied into the Avon giving up Stringer and the back and forth between those two guys being given up by each other. Avon gives up Stringer in the barbershop, right? When they come into the barbershop, I did not see that coming. The way that unfolded in the barbershop while he was in the chair, I thought that was really well done and tense. And my second one is a smaller. I try to look for smaller ones off the beaten path and off the main storyline. Presbo shooting a fellow cop in the back alley, and the mistaken identity, and just kind of the air that goes out of his sails. I mean, he was a jerk when we met him at the beginning, right? But he's got redeeming qualities that we're going to see more of. And that was the end of his police career there. He was screwed. And he panicked in the moment. He didn't follow protocols and stuff, but it was also an innocent mistake and a tense situation. And it was a humanizing moment there for him.
Most memorable for me is the meeting between Avon and Stringer right before, and they part ways, right? And you kind of know,
they see each other.
You know, it's the last time that they're going to see each other because one's going to make a decision. They ultimately both try to make the decision, but Stringer gets got first. But also a side note from that, Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, Chad, you were there too. Was that not a set in Baltimore right where the Titans stayed at the hotel? Like right down there by the water? Was that not shot right there? Like when I saw the scene, I'm thinking, we literally stood right there, right as the Titans were in Baltimore this past
It might January. Have been. It didn't jump out to me in a way that I'm
it's overlooking the water, you know.
Yeah, there's a few scenes where they get into that inner harbor area yeah. in Baltimore, and you'll see a few more of those in season four where I know exactly where they are a couple of times based on where we were it's staying like in Baltimore.
The Four Seasons is right there. There's yeah. a couple of restaurants, and behind the Four Seasons is the you overlook the water right there. I'm pretty sure that was shot right there.
Remind me more of this scene. Like, what's their final conversation?
Well, they kind of say, you know, they I don't know if they hug or they half hug, but it's kind of like you're my brother, you know, or whatever. But both kind of know where this is headed, right? Like, it's understood that business is business and we're parting ways and one of us is going to be gone, and they part ways. They don't do it to each other, but they have the hit out on each other.
They kind of reminisce about, did you ever think we would get to this level
right.
in doing this? And then, you know, laugh a little bit about the old times, but know that they're now enemies. That was a very powerful moment. All right. Question six, two questions left. What would you change about season three? I'm going to go first because Paul, you mentioned in your second moment from the season, Prez killing the cop. And I understand why that happens, because as you continue to watch, they had to get him off the police force for continued storylines. But it was just such a crushing blow to a guy who was so bad in the beginning, who completely redeemed himself and earned the respect of real police, of good police, right? Lester Freeman liked him. McNulty liked him. Great detectives in the Baltimore Police Department, because he was doing good work in the special crimes unit, right? And it looked like he was turning the corner to being a really good cop. Yeah. Talked about the love of his family and how he doesn't really do anything outside of being a cop. And then that moment happens. And it was just crushing. It's something that, you know, almost selfishly, I wish didn't have to happen in the season. And that's the one thing that I would change. But I understand the reasoning for it also. It was just a tough moment in the show.
For me, I wanted Teresa, the campaign manager, to be more of a behind-the-scenes player than she actually was, right? The puppeteer. The campaign managers that are behind the scenes are negotiating and making things happen more. I thought the scene, whenever they actually figure out, when McNulty figures out that she's a campaign manager and she figures out he's police, like they were going to work together somehow, back-channeling. I thought that's where we were headed. And I just expected to learn more of the political game being played behind the scenes with her. Yes, she keeps Carcetti, you know, improving with public speaking and pairs him with another mayoral candidate, knowing that he poses no threat in the election. But there wasn't much substance to her other than being the political female version of McNulty. She's obsessed over her work. That's not very rewarding because she's not really with someone who knows what the hell he's doing. He's just playing an act more than anything and trying to be something that I don't think he really is. And then the sex was just sex to her, which is exactly what it is for McNulty. She wanted nothing to do with a relationship or learning the substance of the person she was with. That's why she left him to begin with.
And completely turned off when he said he didn't vote.
Right, right.
Which was kind of funny. Because that is her. That's when it ended for them. She was just disgusted.
Yeah, that is her life. That she lives for that. I don't know. I was expecting more depth with her, with the way she was introduced in this season. And it was not much there. There was not much there behind a sex scene in a hotel room.
I love that you said Carcetti, because I want it to be Carcetti, but it's Carcetti. And I don't understand why it's Carcetti. It so should be Carcetti. Yeah, that's driven me crazy throughout. I had three things, and I've said two of them. Marlo Stanfield's got to be older for me. Barksdale's got to be less naive, particularly with thinking that he could get a hit on Clay Davis, which Avon tells him is ridiculous. And honestly, the idea that they could pull off the tolerant zones is pretty far-fetched, that could get pulled off, that press wouldn't have found that out and called attention to it, and it wouldn't have gotten blown up very quickly, I think is pretty far-fetched.
Speaking of Carchetti, Hutton will appreciate this. It was great to see Lord Peter Baelish in a completely different role without the goatee that he has in Game of Thrones later on in his career as a striving to be Baltimore mayoral candidate. And I actually liked his character the more the season went on.
I liked him, Chad, but just real quick, like, I wanted Teresa to mold him more.
Shape him more. Yeah, I agree with you now.
Or him to shape her more.
Yeah, but I mean, she's like there.
She's the kingmaker, and she didn't do enough to produce.
Well, let me put it this way. I want to your Teresa complaint, Hutton. I wanted either her to shape Carchetti more or McNulty to shape her more or her to shape McNulty more.
You wanted some shape.
In his character, right? Like, he kind of does with McNulty, because that's when he has the conversation with Greggs in the car about realizing, you know, I'm just nothing. There's one great line that I forget that I texted you guys that he says about himself and his, you know, why he's an object to women. And that's the only reason women want to be around him, because when he opens his mouth and talks about things, they no longer like him. That part of it, I wish there was more evolving to go with the characters, with all of them. So I'm with you there. Finally, what did we learn from this year? I will begin, because it's a topic we've talked about a lot. Legalizing drugs and prostitution can work to lower the overall crime and improve a city's crime rate, and maybe even entice people to move back into a city if you do it the right way. It also comes at a big time cost. And one of the things that, you know, was interesting about this was the public health part of it, where the public health officials actually like some of it because they could go directly to the people affected by HIV and AIDS. They could go directly and give condoms to people, you know, that needed them. That part of it to me was very interesting with Hamsterdam.
For me, I look at this season, I think the victory isn't satisfying for anyone. And we could say that from season one, and I've pointed that out each time, because McNulty obsessed over nailing Stringer Bell and demanding that his superiors pay him more attention than what he was given. And he did it behind the back of some. And then he's standing over him at the end of episode 11. And the look that he gives is just, I cannot believe this is over. On top of, he had no idea how close he was, how close I was to nailing him. I had him. Yeah. And there is no victory for the people addicted to the drugs that are at the center of this show. To take it a step further, those trying to clean up the streets they don't have a clue what's going on with the streets they're trying to clean up. That went on for how long? And of the course of a season, no one had a clue what was going on.
Total shock and awe when he presents them what they're doing, which is amazing.
Even the reporters are looking around going, what is going on? And again, like, we are set up to think that many of these people are in the same city. And if not, they're down in D.C. And they don't have a clue what's going on in their own city because they don't pay them any attention. That's why Colvin was able to get away with his scheme and why it was working to some extent. But again, the hierarchy of the show remains the theme of the show, where those in charge that call the shots are going to remain on top, and everyone else is just kind of a pawn on the board.
Gentlemen, it's been
fun. Hold on, I didn't get mine. I always say I like international over national, over regional. I like big. I don't like city politics. I this reinforced that. All this little stuff. The deacon over there is not going to like that. You got to appease. How can we appease this deacon on this?
Get with the ministers. You got to get the ministers on your side.
What about the little old lady over there? She's not going to like that. I would be the world's worst city politician if I had to appeal to the small constituencies in life. Oh, some of that stuff just pained me.
So we are coming down the backstretch of the show, episode 4 and 5 remaining for Chad and myself.
Seasons.
And only, 3 or 4 episodes left for Paul. But I'm I'm sitting here going, okay, we're coming down the backstretch. Is this show going to live up to expectation? And right now, it's been a very solid show. I don't regret starting this binge. And I'm looking forward to seasons 4 and 5 as we wrap it up.
I think 4, you guys are going to really like. I think Chad's well into it. 4 is really good.
4 is very good. You can expect awesome. A detour into the education system of Baltimore City and Baltimore City schools, which is a very compelling storyline. But I'll say, Hutton,
who is McNulty banging in the school system?
I prefer schools to city politics. You might not see as much McNulty as you might expect.
The season 4, because that's one of my big takeaways. Let's not spoil it about McNulty. Season 5, Hutton, to your point, to be a truly great show, top 5, top 10 all time for me, season 5 better be really, really good.
Yeah.
It's been a really good show so far. I hesitate to say great. I've enjoyed it. I don't regret it. Season 5 and however that series concludes, better deliver in a big way.
Here's my question. Now, I'll leave this open-ended. I don't know the answer. Did they know season 5 was the end of this series?
I don't know.
That's important. Are they putting a bow on this series, or is it end anticipating a season 6? I don't know the answer to that.
It's a good question.
Find out soon. But I think it's important because it's going to end a lot. It ends a lot differently, right? If you're finishing it, or if you think there might be a season.
It's important for Paul because he's going to be finished by Saturday.
Paul, tell us tonight when you finish the season. Yeah, I'll send you a series. Let us know if it's a good conclusion for you.
I'll send you guys a text.
I say that's next. That's 2 away. We will have a season 4 recap coming up next. Paul will be done with the season by when you hear this, before the season 4 podcast is out there. Always a lot of fun. Again, we're watching The Wire. Hope you can do so with us. That is a wrap for our season 3 recap. We'll be back very soon dropping a new pod recapping season 4. Martin!